attentive ears that will listen to us and assist in enhancing health services.
Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, director of the Kamal Adwan Hospital, describing what's going on in his hospital. Dr. Samer Attar, you worked there as well as other places in North Gaza. Explain what's actually happening. Israel dividing Gaza, the north off from the rest of Gaza, and what this means for the people inside and the targeting in particular of these hospitals.
Yeah, I know the people on that video. I worked with them. They're just truly remarkable. But when we worked in the north, I mean, that whole area has always been cut off. When you work in that area, you feel cut off from the rest of the world. You might as well be at the top of Mount Everest because they're always waiting for fuel. They're always waiting for food. Some days we just didn't have with the equipment we needed to do what we needed to do. So no gowns, no drapes, instruments weren't sterile. There'd be so many people trying to get through the front door after a bombing attack. There'd be no place to step. The floors would be smeared with blood and body parts, and you'd be stepping over dead bodies to try to get to the living. And most people died. I mean, some days the most you could do is just hold people's hand and look them in the eyes. You watch them die, either because they were malnourished, they were starving, or we had no blood to give them. Every day it felt like that. Every day in the north felt like that. And the directors there only got a chance to breathe once a shipment of fuel and medicine and food came in. And that was always a Hail Mary. That was always felt like it was last minute. And now that it's really cut off and they're not getting supplies in, they're not getting fuel in, they're not getting medicines in, they're not getting food in, now they're really desperate because before people would arrive last minute, they would arrive before the point of no return. And now that seems to be happening.
And can you talk specifically about the children in these hospitals? The number of children who are died, who are maimed, who've had amputations, well over 1,000 now are alive but amputated. The situation there and this latest situation where one of the hospitals was the site of what was supposed to be a vaccination program today.
Yeah, you leave all of them behind. That's the hard part. You hate to see anyone suffer or die, but when you're just seeing innocent kids, it's not just the physical wounds, too. I remember one little girl, she was caught in an airstrike, and she was buried alive for 12 hours next to her dead parents. And then she got dug out, and we had to perform emergency surgery on her leg. There's another little girl, 5 years old. She came in with both legs just mangled after an explosion, and the mom was just begging us not to amputate her legs. And we both knew her legs weren't going to make it. But those are the conversations we have to have. And I remember another 7-year-old girl came in with her arm just missing. Her arm was just blown off. And the surgeon across from me, just a very stoic, unemotional, strong, resilient surgeon, just broke down in tears. He had had it after 6 months, just couldn't take it anymore. So that toll is very exacting. I mean, the physical wounds you can get to heal, you can get an amputation wound to heal, but it's the psychic scars of seeing your parents buried alive, or you're buried alive and they're dead and you're looking at them, everyone in Gaza, every bed you go to has a horrifying story of loss, of losing a home, losing a loved one, losing a limb, losing an eye. And it never ends. And it just, every day you wake up to more and more of it. And that's just what makes it so horrifying.
I wanted to play a clip from your New York Times opinion short documentary that you created, Dr. Samer Attar, in your diary of 2 weeks volunteering in Gaza.
The World Health Organization has documented 450 attacks on the healthcare system since October 7. The staff of this hospital told me they were stripped to their underwear and handcuffed. And after one attack,
they killed them by gunshot. Two hygienists and one nurse.
Sorry. Israel says Hamas hides in these facilities.
This is the entrance to the emergency room of Indonesian Hospital, which is currently non-functional.
When this hospital was bombed, it was reported that at least a dozen people were killed. But that's a massive understatement. Because when this CT scanner was destroyed, countless Gazans were given a death sentence. This patient, both of these patients, every single one of these patients needs a CT scan to diagnose their injury.
For this patient, in normal situation, we need to plan CT.
So just keep an eye on him and make sure nothing bad happens. And if it does, we do our best.
We cannot do anything.
As we begin to wrap up, Dr. Samer Attar, that is a clip from an video editorial you did for The New York Times. And here you're also talking about medical workers being shot and handcuffed. Explain.
Yeah, hospitals should be safe. Hospitals represent havens for communities. They represent a community's capacity to heal and recover. And it's not a political issue. It's a medical one. Hospitals shouldn't be targeted. Hospitals shouldn't be used for military purposes. They should be places where if you're sick or injured, you can go and be treated without having to worry about being bombed in the hospital or in front of the hospital. I can't emphasize that point any more than just having said what I said.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Samer Attar volunteered 4 times as a surgeon in North Gaza with Doctors Without Borders and other organizations, most recently in June. He is a surgeon at Northwestern Medicine in Chicago. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli journalist Meron Rapaport. And then we'll talk about Israel's attack on UNIFIL. Stay with us. Yasmin Hamdan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's intensifying attacks and siege on northern Gaza comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is considering implementing a surrender or starve policy in the area. We're joined now by the Israeli journalist Meron Rapaport, recently wrote an article for 972 headlined, "A Plan to Liquidate Northern Gaza is Gaining Steam." Meron is an editor and writer at the independent Israeli news site Local Call, a columnist at 972 magazine. On Saturday, he was awarded the prestigious Golden Dove for Peace by the International Research Institute Disarmament Archive in Rome, Italy. In his acceptance speech, he said, "Although journalism alone cannot bring peace, it can open spaces of humanity." We welcome you, Meron, to Democracy Now! If you can start off by talking about what you are saying, what the policy of Israel now is in Gaza, the separation of Gaza, what it means as you talk about the starving of Gaza.
Hello. Of course, we don't know exactly what is the Israeli plan now. The general plan, what is called the plan offered by ex-Major General Giora Eiland, speaks about offering the Palestinian in northern Gaza, north of the Netzarim corridor, meaning all Gaza City and its surrounding, offering them a week to evacuate Gaza, go south to the humanitarian area, what is called, near the Muassi, near Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. And then after a week, there will be a total siege on northern Gaza, and a siege meaning no food, no water, no electricity, no medicine, nothing. And in a week time, all those who stay will be considered terrorists that could be hit. The idea is that the civil population will leave, only the Hamas militant will stay, and therefore Israel will be able to clean this area. This is the plan by General Eiland. The plan was not adopted officially, neither by the government, although it is said that Netanyahu is considering it, and nor by the army officially. The operation now in Jabalia that we heard about is officially not part of this plan, but it does seem that many parts of this plan are being implemented on the ground. We heard that there's no supplies coming into northern Gaza at all in the last 2 weeks. We are seeing this evacuation order to the population of northern Gaza and to the hospitals in northern Gaza. So we have the sense here that this plan is being actually implemented without being officially adopted.
One of the people who escaped the Jabalia refugee camp told the Financial Times, it seems that the Jabalia camp will be deleted from Gaza's geography. If you can talk more about the intentions of Israel right now, I mean, just in the last week, more than 150 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli airstrikes around the camp, thousands more trapped, Israel encircling the area, leaving only one exit. And what do, as we speak to you in Tel Aviv, you are an Israeli journalist, what does the Israeli population understand what's happening in Gaza? In the United States, in the corporate broadcast media, you hardly see anything about Gaza now. It's much more focused on Lebanon. And these major networks do not keep repeating that Israel does not allow international journalists into Gaza.
So, again, the Israeli public is also much focused on Lebanon. But even, and certainly after what happened last night, when a drone attack on an army base in Binyamina, which is some 100 kilometers south of the Lebanese border, killing four soldiers. So, the whole attention is on Lebanon, and this is maybe one of the reasons that we see this attack in Jabalia, because the international attention is on Lebanon and not in Gaza. Anyhow, even before that, there was very little attention in the Israeli media and Israeli public to the consequences of the Israeli attacks on Gaza. And if there was some attention, it was mainly seen as what Israel is doing is right, that destroying Gaza, destroying physically Gaza City and its neighborhoods and the camps around it is as a logical thing to do as a response to October 7, because if there will be no Gaza, then there will be no threat. That is how very, very many Israelis see it. So this is, generally speaking, the Israeli response. People don't really understand the connection between this and returning the hostages, don't see a connection with this and continuing of the war. I think there is a large support for this, although I must say, of course, the images are not shown on Israeli TV. People don't see children burning alive in Gaza, as in the Arab world and elsewhere maybe people see. So the whole of the information is not in front of most of the Israeli public.
I wanted to go to a piece that you wrote in 972, Haaretz also wrote, about this surrender or starve plan that was proposed last fall by Major General Eilon. Explain who Major General Eilon is, the idea that anyone who remains behind would face hunger and be treated as Hamas operatives and legitimate military targets, as you've described, Meron, and what exactly this will constitute in Gaza.
Again, the plan by Major General Eilon, in the ex-general, is, as I said, to give the population a week an opportunity to live within a week, and then there will be a siege, and those who stay will be considered as a terrorist. Eilon himself is not really a right-wing in the sense he's not part of the religious right. He's not even a supporter of Netanyahu. He comes from a military background, even what is in Israel considered center-left background. So he is not a fanatic supporter of Netanyahu, not at all. He claims in all his interviews that this plan conforms with the international law, that siege is a legitimate way of war as long as you give the population, the civil population, time to leave. What is does not exist really in his plan, and I think it's not by chance, it's not detailed in his plan, is first of all, what will happen with this population if they will leave? Will they be able to come back? Because this is not written in the plan. It says only that they will have to leave, they will be given humanitarian aid, but it's not, there's no promise that they will be able to come back even in a month's time, 2 months' time, 3 months' time to their home. So this is not there. So therefore, the fear for another Nakba is there. And more importantly is he does not detail what will happen if most of the population, as we see now in the description we heard just now, most of the population refuses to leave. It refuses because it saw what happened to the people who left in the beginning of the war, that there's no safe shelter in Gaza, neither in the south. They refuse also for political reasons, because they're afraid that this is the beginning of a new Nakba, and the idea is to really clean Gaza and maybe open it to resettlement by Israelis. So he does not say what will happen if tens of thousands, of maybe even hundreds of thousands of Palestinians will decide to stay after this week. What will happen to them? Will Israel starve 500,000 people, 300,000 people, 200,000 people? Nobody really knows the exact number of the people north of Netzarim corridor in the northern part of Gaza Strip. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about Israel committing an extermination of hundreds of tens of thousands of people, if they will choose to stay. This is not detailed in his plan, and I think it's not by chance it's not detailed.
Low-lying, really somewhat low-tech drone that Hezbollah sent into Israel near Haifa. Explain the significance of Benyamina, this military base that houses the Golani Brigade, and the deaths of four Israeli soldiers and the wounding of 60. What this means for Israel right now.
I think, of course, the base itself is not that important. It's a relatively small base, quite far from the border. It's a training base. It's not a combat. It's not for combat units. It's for training. So the base itself is not extremely important. But the fact that a drone arrived so far, almost 100 kilometers from the Lebanese border, and was very precise, a dining room in this army bases, what it made is the whole euphoria that was in very present in Israel after the pager attacks, after the assassination of Nasrallah and all the leadership of Hezbollah, where most Israelis thought that here Israel is winning the war, that the war will be over, that the Hamas and Hezbollah will surrender and that Iran will back off. What we are seeing now, that this is far from over. And the fact that Hezbollah, after being hit so hard, is still able to hit at the heart of Israel is, of course, very destabilizing, you know, this state of euphoria that was existed for a few weeks. But I think now it's dissipating.
Maron Rapaport, I want to thank you for being with us, editor and writer at the independent Israeli news site Local Call, columnist at 972 Magazine. His piece headlined, "A Plan to Liquidate Northern Gaza is Gaining Steam," and has writes for The Nation magazine. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show looking at Israel's intensifying attacks in Lebanon, where officials said Sunday Israeli strikes across Lebanon during the weekend killed at least 50 people. Israel's facing international condemnation after repeatedly attacking UN peacekeeping forces in southern Israel. At least five members of UNIFIL, that's the UN interim force in Lebanon, have been injured in recent days. UN's also accused Israel of forcibly entering and destroying a part of the UNIFIL base near the Israeli border, and rejected calls by the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to remove the peacekeeping forces from the region. On Sunday, UN Secretary General Guterres warned attacks against peacekeepers, quote, may constitute a war crime. For more, we go to Boston, where we're joined by Rami Khoury, Palestinian-American journalist, senior public policy fellow at American University of Beirut. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Rami. In these last 6 minutes that we have, if you can talk about the significance of the attack on the UN base, the injuring of the two UN Indonesian peacekeepers. The UNIFIL is made up of peacekeepers from a number of different countries, including Indonesia and Italy and other places. Essentially, is this attack on the United Nations?
Yes, that's true. It's essentially an attack on the UN. It's an attack against the modern system of the rule of law that the victorious powers in World War II set up after 1945. The UN, development agencies, humanitarian law codes, all kinds of things that were supposed to make the world safe from another genocide as happened in Nazi Germany. And the message of Israel is this is nonsense. None of this makes sense to us. We're not going to respect any of this stuff. People can make up any laws. They can make up any courts. They can do whatever they want around the world. The people of Israel, and that's, there's a difference between the people of Israel and the Jewish people, because not all Jewish people in the world agree with this, but the people of Israel seem to accept fully the policy of the Israeli government now to kill and burn alive and torture people in Palestine and now in Lebanon in any way they want to achieve what the Israeli government says is its security. But this is a flawed policy, because what we've seen around the region for years is that this kind of savagery only brings about greater responses and greater determination to fight it. Now to the point where the state of Iran, not just a militia somewhere, but the government of Iran, is involved in the battle, and the U.S. is sending more troops and anti-aircraft defense systems to Israel and expanding its bases around the region. So the message of Israel is, we don't care about anything except Israel, and we'll destroy the whole region if we need to. And this is something that is possible. I don't think it's going to happen. But a regional conflagration with the U.S. and Iran now facing off against each other, and Iran and Israel firing missiles back and forth at each other, and Hezbollah and Iran both showing that they have the technology to evade Israel's air defense systems and hit precise targets, that they're still only hitting military targets. They haven't gone after civilians as the Israelis have. This is the bigger picture that we have to look at in the region. And the Israelis don't seem to understand that the Palestinian people and Lebanese people and Iranians and everybody else in the region are human beings, just like the Israelis and Jewish people are human beings. And they should go back to Masada, the great fortress on the overlooking the Dead Sea, where in 73 AD, the Jewish forces there preferred to die by suicide rather than to be killed or taken slaves by the Romans who had laid siege to them. And now the situation is reversed, that the Israelis are the Romans. They're laying siege to parts of Gaza. They're destroying parts of Lebanon. They're threatening Iran. And the people are not going to surrender. They will die, and many of them are dying. People, doctors, as you just heard, saying, we're not going to evacuate our hospitals. We'll die with our patients. This is a human reaction. It's not a Palestinian or an Arab or an Islamic. It's a human reaction that the Jewish people showed the world in their history and in their biblical texts, which are widely adopted, that this is how human beings survive. They survive by defending their dignity and their physical life. And this is where we are now in this battle. And the UN is one of the targets. UNRWA is something that Israel has been trying to shatter for years. They don't allow Guterres to come into Israel anymore. This is a terrible trajectory, and people will fight back against it.
Rami, in this last minute we have, you now have, in light of all of this, still the U.S. is sending 100 troops. This is completely new, and this anti-missile THAAD system. And this in the midst of this, to say the least, extremely significant election, which is neck and neck between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Harris very close in these battleground states that have large Arab American, Lebanese American, Muslim American communities like Michigan. What is the effect of this?
We've seen the effect already that not only Arab and Muslim Americans, but a coalition that they have created with Black Americans and Hispanic Americans, progressive Jews, church groups, labor unions, academics, a big coalition has emerged focused on the refusal as Americans to be a part of a genocidal war by Israel against Palestinians. Americans don't want this to be their legacy. They don't want this to be their policy. And they're saying, well, we'll vote for somebody else. We don't care who's president, because there's not much difference between Kamala Harris and Biden and Trump and anybody else. They've been killing Palestinians and Arabs since the Zionist movement started 100 years ago, which aimed to get the Palestinians out of Palestine and replace them with a Jewish state, which has happened. They have a Jewish state. They want to keep expanding, it seems. And this is not going to work. This is a recipe for catastrophe. So the Americans sending more arms is what America does in its foreign policy as its primary means of—
We have 5 seconds, Rami.
Yeah, so American militarism and Israeli barbarism are only going to create a catastrophe for everybody. And now the Gaza may influence the
American direction. We're going to have to leave it there. Rami Khoury, journalist, thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.